you very much, Mr. Mayor. After having associated yourself with my old friend Alan Page, I'm going to treat you more kindly every day, because he's quite a man. Reverend Brown and Mayor Cohen, Mr. Easley, and all of those of the board that are here, and the representative of the HUD administration, our city officials and neighbors. You may have noted that when I came in here, I brought along a document. That's a mighty good speech that's in there. And if any of you want it, you write to me and I'll send you a copy. But right now, I want to just talk to you as a friend and neighbor and share some of my thoughts with you, some of the thoughts that I have carefully put down on paper, but intend to just share with you in the most informal manner. First of all, I feel, as others do here in the area, that the Community Housing Corporation has done a remarkable job in this program of rehabilitation. And I'm convinced that more of this can be done and needs to be done. America has a sort of a bulldozer mentality at times, that every time we see anything that looks like it is over 20 years old, we think it ought to be torn down. When in fact, many of our buildings, particularly in the field of housing, were built of very good materials in years gone by with excellent workmanship. And with a modest amount of investment, much can be done to make these homes livable and modern. When you travel abroad, you find this so often. Not long ago, I was privileged to be in Brussels, Belgium, where I was meeting with some of the officials of European countries on problems that relate to Minnesota agriculture. And I was given an opportunity to tour the city. And I'd point out two of these beautiful buildings and I'd say, "When did you build those?" And I'll never forget the man that was with me from the European Common Market. He said, "Those were built in the 18th century. I said, "You mean in the 1700s? He said, "Yes, they're rather new." And he wasn't joking. As we went along a little further, we found some that had been built much earlier than that, and they were still usable, not only usable, livable housing facilities. Of course, they'd been modernized, but their basic structure was still there. Now, what we see here, and we heard it too in the remarks a little earlier, a fantastic group of buildings that with some determination and capital, plus some good engineering and redesign, you've been able to make into fine, usable living quarters for good families of this part of our state, this great city of St. Paul. I just came from another meeting in your sister city, Minneapolis. It was a group called Women in the Construction Industry. These are people that are engineers, architects, builders, contractors, and also people in the trades. All women, hundreds of them, that gathered here for a regional meeting. And I spoke to them as I want to speak to you. Or should I put it this way, I'm going to speak to them, you, as I spoke to them. I said, "I want to talk to you about some solid economics, because you, the American people, need to understand it, and we need to know where we're going as well as where we are. So maybe we should start out by pointing out where we are today in this country. Here's a fabulous country, blessed as no other land in the world with resources, a huge piece of territory, contiguous, not divided up by other nation states. Here we are, hopefully one people, at least that's our dream. Here we are with the greatest science and technology the world has ever known. An economy, even with a recession, and a serious recession, still at a rate of $1,500,000,000. Here we are with the best labor force in the world, and I think the best management. And yet, for some peculiar reason, we find ourselves today with over 8.5 million of our people unemployed by official figures, another 3.5 million of our people partly employed on part-time basis, another 1.25 million that have given up looking for a job, dropped out of the job market. Here we find ourselves with a 10% drop in real terms in our gross national product. And as I speak to you today, approximately 32% of our entire plant capacity, of the manufacturing industrial capacity in this country, is idle. Idle because of a recession, idle because of troubles in our economy. Now, you hear many people say that our rate of unemployment is about 8.9 or 9%. The real truth is, ladies and gentlemen, that it is closer to 11 and 12%. If you figure in those who really want to work that have to work only part-time, or those who've dropped out of the labor market. Let me give you a startling figure. At any one time in America this year, 28 million people will be directly affected by unemployment. That is breadwinners and the members of their family. At any one time, as I speak to you now, 28 million of them, the victims, direct victims of unemployment. And during this year of 1975, 70 million Americans will have been the innocent victims of economics that resulted in unemployment, so that 70 million people in America will be directly injured by loss of income as by a breadwinner or an income producer in that family. One third of the population of this country in the next 365 days of 1975, one third will have been touched by unemployment sometime during that year. That is an incredible fact, and it need not be. We are being told time after time that you cannot have full employment without raging inflation. Ladies and gentlemen, the little country of Norway today has 2.5% unemployment, and it has a much lower rate of inflation than we do. I was in the Federal Republic of Germany that was in ashes, 30 years ago this month. 30 years ago was BE Day. 30 years ago, Germany was in ashes, destroyed. Today, Germany has an unemployment rate of 4%, slightly over about 4.2 when compared to ours of 9, and it has an inflation rate of half of ours. And despite this, friends, it has better than a million foreign workers in its country. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I tell you that we can do better. And we've had people telling us far too long that we ought to learn how to tolerate 4% or 5% unemployment. We once said that if you could get unemployment down to 4%, we would call it full employment. European countries get unemployment down to 2%, still call it unemployment. But today we have an unemployment rate which is destroying the lifeblood of this country. Unemployment is not just a statistic, it's a human tragedy. Unemployment is not merely the loss of income, it's being told, Reverend Brown, that you're not needed. It's telling someone out here who was the last to be hired that he's the first to be fired. And might I add that that directly affects many of the people that we call our minorities, the Black, Puerto Rican, the Mexican-American, the American Indian, the poor white that was the last to get a job, the first to be fired. The people who least can afford it are the ones who bear the great burden. And that's why I feel, as I've never felt before, the necessity of speaking openly, directly, and even bluntly, and maybe at times harshly, about the mismanagement of this economy and what it is resulting and what its results really mean. There is no reason in the world why we ought not to be able to build homes in America for every American family. No way and no reason in the world. And when I hear people talk about the degradation of our slums and of our and the deterioration and the obsolescence of our inner cities, I want you to know what that means. That means that people that are compelled to live in these areas also become degraded, also become obsolete, also are forgotten. because the physical environment and the human environment go hand in hand. It also means that you are destroying human potential. And yet, ladies and gentlemen, our government is willing to tolerate this in the name of what they call the free market. The average interest rate to build a home in America in this past year has been over 10%. That means, according to the most recent study made by your Congress, that unless you have $23,000 a year income or more, you can't afford to buy a home. That means that your average monthly payment would have to be over $300 a month on a 30-year mortgage. If you could reduce that interest rate to 6%, you could buy that same home for slightly over $200 a month on the interest, on mortgage and taxes and interest. Ladies and gentlemen, we loan money all over the world, and by necessity, we'll continue to do so, because after all, it is one world. We need to loan money. Just the other day, I had a man come in from the Treasury Department to see me. In fact, it was the day before yesterday. He said, "Senator Humphrey, we're going to have to send a bill up to Congress to replenish the funds in the Inter-American Development Bank to help our friends in Latin America and South America." Now, dear friends, we've done this before, and we're going to continue to do it because it's the right thing to do. It isn't as if we're giving them the money. We're loaning them the money, and they pay it back. The Inter-American Development Bank makes money as well as loans it. The World Bank, on which we have 70% of the capital, loans money at low rates of interest, but it makes money also. It earns profits. The Asian Development Bank for the people of Asia, the African Development Bank for the people of Africa. We have these banks all over the world in which your government, you as taxpayers, put American money. Now, don't misunderstand me. That money does come back. These people do pay their loans. But these are all low-interest loans. The Export-Import Bank of your country, with $26 billion of capital, loans money all over the world to buy American products. The Boeing Aircraft Company, when it sells a 747 plane to a country in Latin America, Asia, or Africa, gets that plane financed by the Export-Import Bank. At what rate of interest? 6%. The Soviet Union wishes to build a pipeline to bring natural gas out of Siberia into Eastern and Western Europe, a necessary project, and will contribute to the well-being of the people of the continent of Europe. They borrow money out of the Export-Import Bank for not more than 7%. Now, I'm going to put it on the line. If we can afford to loan people that we've never met, people that we know not, people in faraway places, if we can loan them money for their homes, to build a home in Brazil, or in Ecuador, or in Peru, or in Greece, or in Turkey, or in Afghanistan. If we can loan them money at 6% to build a home there, let me ask you, why in the name of common sense can't we do the same thing for the people of Minnesota and the people of the United States? We can do it. It's a government policy to do the other. It is a government policy to let the people of Minnesota, the people of other parts of America, pay exorbitant interest rates for their homes. Now, don't misunderstand me again. If you want to build a nightclub or a horse race track or a country club, you ought to pay the going rate of the market price. But there are some things that are important: our health, our education, our safety, our homes. Those things are important. And every American family is entitled, if it wishes, to be able to buy a home at a reasonable rate of interest under terms that it can afford to pay. And if we do that, we'll have better cities. We'll have less crime. We'll have less delinquency. We'll have more jobs. We'll have more income. And Mayor Cohen, every city will be a better place in which to live. In many of our cities on the eastern seaboard, dear friends, the older cities of America, they are becoming the residential areas of the poor, the elderly, the sick, and the minorities. And they're being neglected. which is a new form of racism, a new form of prejudice. Thank God that in the state of Minnesota that we understand that we ought to keep our cities livable. And there are no more two more beautiful cities in America than the city of St. Paul and sister city of Minneapolis. These are cities that are governable, these are cities that are livable, and they can maybe be made even better. And this represents making it better right here today. We must never let our problems get ahead of our solutions. We must never let obsolescence and decay set in to where it costs too much to repair. And we can remodel and rehabilitate thousands of homes, and they'll pay out. They'll pay out in more ways than one. They'll pay out in better health, in better living conditions, in better environment. You know, we have a lot of environmentalists these days, and I salute them for their cause. They want us to have clean air. Thank goodness. They want us to have clean water. Thank goodness. That's a part of the physical environment. But ladies and gentlemen, the place in which you live, the neighborhood in which you live, the block on which you live is also part of your environment. And we got to have people that are concerned about that. It does you a little good to breathe clean air and live in filth. It does little good to have clean drinking water and live in poverty and to live in slums. And I want my environmentalist friends to get with it. Not only to see to it that we take care of the trees and the forests, not only to see that we take care of the water and the air, but I want you who, many of you who are living in very nice homes, to be interested in taking care of the rehabilitation of areas in our cities so that families who can't afford a $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 home can have a wholesome, decent, safe, modern place in which to live. That's what an American citizen ought to, a citizenship ought to mean. Now, dear friends, many of our problems today are of our own making. Our own making. Billions and billions that we spend on wars, on weapons of destruction that are non-productive. Federal Reserve System that spends its time fighting inflation rather than trying to make this economy work. There's no way to win the war against inflation if production falls. The answer to inflation is work, production. The American people want to go to work. They don't want food stamps, they want a job. They don't want to be taken care of, they want to take care of themselves. Oh yes, for those that are sick and needy, those that are old and infirm, a mother with children who wants to stay and take care of her children, those are the people that need our compassion, our charity, and they ought to be treated kindly and generously. But most Americans that are able physically and mentally want to work and should. And we ought to be building things. We've got things to do in America. We've got homes to build. We used to build 2 million homes a year. Now this year we'll build less than 950,000. As long as the housing industry is in a depression, there is no way to get out of this recession. This recession is like a disease. It spreads. This recession will cost the American people in lost production in the next 2 years $600 billion. This recession, according to the Federal Reserve System itself and the President's Council of Economic Advisors, will cost the American people $1.5 trillion in the next 5 years. Lost income, no revenues, lost jobs, lost opportunities. Those are the deficits that I worry about. We've got some people that are more worried about the federal deficit than they are the human deficit. But the answer to a deficit is to produce. And I'll tell you, we can put more people to work in America, building houses, building hospitals, building schools, building roads, modernizing our railroads, modernizing our ports, cleaning our rivers. We can put the people to work if we have the will to do it. Instead of having people sitting there figuring out monetary policy, which is a highfalutin word for high interest rates and tight credit, we need to have people that have a vision of America that has optimism and adventure and courage and the willingness to pioneer. That's the way we built this country. This nation wasn't built by a lot of people who just sat in the drawing rooms of their corporate offices and said, we can't do it. It was built by people who took a chance, a Jim Hill, yes, mentioned here today. It was built by people who wanted to go to work. And your government has the responsibility to help make that possible. I serve as the chairman of the Joint Economic Committee of the Congress of the United States. I've listened to every witness from every walk of life. I've heard them tell us what we ought to do. But I have found, if I've got to be frank about it, a government that refuses to listen and, more importantly, refuses to act. I compliment the group and the board that made this project possible. It's about the only one in the United States. You must have put up with an unbelievable amount of trouble. It takes two years for the Federal Housing Administration to clear a mortgage for a multiple housing unit. Unpardonable, inexcusable, outrageous. The Congress of the United States passed a law a year ago that said because of the increased costs in taxes and utility rates, that subsidized housing projects would be given operating subsidies. That's the law of the land. And the Federal Housing Administration hasn't spent a dollar, despite the edict and the law of the land, refuses to do it. Two presidents have impounded hundreds of millions of dollars of housing funds, which is illegal, which is a violation of the public law. The Congress of the United States, the duly elected representative, said that money is to be used for low and moderate income housing. And let me tell you right now, you're not going to be able to house low and moderate income people without housing subsidies and interest subsidy. It's got to be done. This is why I've introduced legislation for a federal housing bank that will provide money, if not more than 0.5% above what the federal government pays for it at any time. And we'll see to it that no mortgage is over 6%, and the difference between what the government pays and what the mortgage is will be made up by a subsidy. That will make it possible for people to have jobs and for families to work. And somebody says, Mr. Humphrey, that will cost you hundreds of millions of dollars a year. That's right, it could. How much do you think it costs for unemployment compensation this year? Inadequate as it is, people can't live off of it. It costs $22 billion so far in the estimate for this year, $22 billion. Dear friends, for a $1 billion interest subsidy, we could build hundreds of thousands of homes and put hundreds of thousands of people to work and make America come alive. Clean up these slums in some of our cities, and more importantly, provide a decent living quarter for people and their families. We in this country say we believe in the American family. God bless our home, and we have in many places these little signs. Dear friends, there's something else written in the scripture, woe unto ye hypocrites. If we believe in the American family, let's give the family a chance. And the American family cannot have a chance in decay and filth and obsolescence and slums. The American family needs a place that it can call its home. It needs home ownership. It needs rent that they can afford to pay. And if there are multiple housing units in a big apartment area that's under a federal program and that program needs some help to operate, it should have it. Better that we should give the help that way than we give it some of the ways that we do. Well, that's some of the stuff I had in that speech. But what I've got in there is better than what I've said. But you're standing, and I don't want to keep you any longer. I'm an optimist about this country. And I'll tell you why, because I don't think the American people are going to put up with the kind of nonsense that we've had. I think they're going to want to do better. We're not perfect. We'll never be perfect. we're always going to have something to do. But the cities of America should be the great places in which to live. It's here where you have so much that is good, and yet we're letting in some of our great cities so much happen that is bad. Instead of spending our time counting up the number of juvenile delinquents and the rate of crime, I suggest we spend our time figuring out how we can get people to work on something that they enjoy, how we can clean up and build up and straighten up and stand up. That's what this country needs. It needs a call to action. It needs just each and every one of us to say that it can be done, because we have all that it takes to do it. Believe it or not, our banks are bulging with money. Our savings and loan associations are running over with money. But the official policy of our central bank in this country is to make you pay through the nose, because they're worried about inflation instead of about people. The person without a job, he's worried about whether he's going to have income. Surely inflation is a curse, but unemployment is fatal. One is misery, the other is literally death. And how easy it is for those of us that have a job to sit around and look upon the current recession and say, well, you know, we'll just have to figure it out. Because some of us get paid to figure it out. That's our job. But for the person that doesn't have the job, every moment that we figure is a moment that he loses, that he or she loses in their lives. So I commend, Mr. Mayor, you and your city. I commend the board of directors here of this marvelous project. And I challenge my government to give us a chance to do better. I ask of the current administration and Congress to provide the means for people to help themselves. And I would bet my life that is it, as of this afternoon, your government would say that we intend to build, and we could build, by the way, 20,000 more homes in Minneapolis and St. Paul if we only reduce that interest rate by 2%. I venture to say that we'd have people lined up at the job office. We'd have contractors waiting. We'd have suppliers bidding, and we'd have a recovery in this community the likes of which we've never known. And it doesn't take you to get a Harvard degree to figure that out. It's just simple. Put money, people, and resources, and management, and labor together, the five elements. And once that we've done that, this nation will be back on the road to its growth and its prosperity. And without being on that road, nothing that we want to have done will be accomplished. We'll be spending our time in recrimination, scolding one another, divided and bitter. The one way to bring America into the path of the pursuit of happiness is to give us the privilege of the joy of achievement. And I sense it right here, and that's why I came today. I tell you, this is really great. I thank God that we've had people that have had this much initiative and this much imagination and get up and go. Thank you very much.